Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice, recording at our studio in East County. We hope you're all staying dry out there in this wet, wintry weather, but the good news is the drought is now considered over in 40% of California, though not yet in San Diego County. Today we've got some important stories on our show, starting with the district attorney's decision in several high-profile police shootings. Plus, we'll have reactions from the family of Alfredo Longo and a civil rights leader to the exoneration of an El Cajon police officer in that shooting. We'll also have news about gas protests taking place across Mexico that forced closure of an international border crossing into San Diego last weekend. Learn what's fueling anger and massive demonstrations across Mexico on today's show. Then we'll tell you about a controversial action by county supervisors to raise their own salaries and pensions, and why some county workers are not happy about that action. Then on our Capitol Report, we'll have some disturbing details found by an investigative journalist regarding Rex Tillerson, the former head of ExxonMobil and now Donald Trump's nominee to serve as Secretary of State. Hear about litigation filed that claims the company under Tillerson's leadership engaged in extreme human rights abuses, including murder. Our newsmaker interview today is with Reverend Shane Harris from the National Action Network here in San Diego. He'll tell you why his organization is working to reclaim Dr. Martin Luther King's dream right here in San Diego with a platform of important issues, and share details about a march and rally slated for Martin Luther King Day coming up on Monday. On the second half of our show today, hear about all the top festivals and events coming up in San Diego's inland region on Destination East County, from a Native American powwow to a British comedy, and from cabaret nights at a local theater to Ben Vereen performing live on stage. On Crime Beat, we'll have some startling revelations about the husband of a woman found dead along a trail in Jamul. Plus, hear about stolen goods found in a U-Haul truck in Alpine that the Sheriff's Department is trying to return to the rightful owners. It's official. The Chargers are bolting from San Diego to Los Angeles, as you've no doubt heard by now. We'll have comments from the Spanos family, as well as reactions from disillusioned fans. We'll also have news about a standout San Diego athlete ushered into a College Athlete Hall of Fame. You'll learn about a group of local people working for the benefit of the Mount Laguna Recreation Area and how you can volunteer to help out. Plus, on Green Scene, hear about disruptions to traffic and campgrounds as road widening and construction begins for the controversial Tule Wind Project on federal recreation lands in McCain Valley, right here in East County. We'll have all these stories for you on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. San Diego District Attorney Bonnie Dumanis announced Tuesday that her office has exonerated El Cajon Police Officer Richard Gonzalez and will not file charges over the shooting of Alfredo Longo. Dumanis said at a press conference, "If one objectively examines the facts, the only reasonable conclusion is that the officer's actions were legally justified and understandable." She indicated that she realized the decision will upset some in the community, but added, "It's also my genuine hope that people can direct the anger into a constructive conversation that focuses on positive change." Olongo, an African immigrant from Uganda, was fatally shot last September after his family called 911 seeking help because he was acting erratically and suffering an apparent mental health crisis. A psychiatric emergency response team, or PERT team, was unavailable at the time, so two officers were dispatched. Video showed that within moments of arriving at the parking lot where Olongo was wandering, Officer Gonzalez advanced, gun drawn, while his partner aimed a taser. Olongo drew a vaping pen or electronic cigarette with holder from his pocket and assumed a shooting-type stance, pointing the device at Officer Gonzalez, who mistook it for a gun. He shot and killed Olongo in front of his sister, as surveillance video showed. Dumanis called the circumstances tragic, but cited a Supreme Court case that found a shooting is justified if the officer reasonably believed that his or her life, or the life of someone else, was in danger. but the DA also noted that police officers are increasingly expected to deal with the problems that society isn't effectively dealing with, quote, mental health, drugs, poverty, and homelessness. Olongo's father, Richard Olongo, voiced outrage and anguish at the DA's announcement during a press conference afterwards at the Ebenezer Missionary Baptist Church in San Diego. He stated, "War has been declared on humanity and the battle line has been drawn." Reverend Shane Harris, a civil rights leader and head of the National Action Network in San Diego, told East County Magazine, "We're not shocked. We expected this. This is why we kept calling for the DOJ to get involved," he said, a reference to the U.S. Department of Justice. But federal intervention seems less likely under a Trump administration than the Obama administration, given President-elect Donald Trump's nomination of Senator Jeff Sessions as Attorney General. Sessions has been criticized for his record on civil rights issues as a former U.S. attorney in Alabama. Harris says activists also plan to ask Governor Jerry Brown now to appoint a special prosecutor in the Olongo case, as New York Governor Mario Cuomo did in the case of Eric Garner's death at the hands of police. He called that action a major victory. Harris says of the DA's decision over the Olongo shooting, "Our outrage is coming not just from this incident, but what led to it." He notes that a PERT team was not available and says he believes protocol was not followed after 3 calls reporting Olongo's erratic actions. Asked what reforms he seeks in El Cajon, Harris called for the city to establish an independent police review board. He criticized council members, including newly elected Democrat Ben Colasso, for failing to support establishment of a Citizens Police Oversight Board, a move that was recommended by the county grand jury even before the Olongo shooting. Harris also called on El Cajon Police Chief Jeff Davis to fire Officer Gonzalez, who had a history of sexual harassment claims against him. "Firing Gonzalez would look like justice to us," Reverend Harris says. The prominent civil rights leader concludes, "We will hold sit-ins and protests, whatever it takes. We want the city council to know that this will not die. This will be front and center on their doorstep." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Gene Carpenter with more news from the San Diego District Attorney's Office. In addition to exonerating an El Cajon police officer who fatally shot Alfred Olongo in a case that drew national publicity, San Diego District Attorney Bonnie Dumanis this week announced that her office will not file charges in 4 other officer-involved fatal shootings. 3 sheriff's deputies were justified in shooting David Michael Moya after he fired a high-powered bow at SWAT members from the window of his 2-story home in Santee, the DA concluded. Moya's mother had called for help, saying he had threatened to kill her. The DA released a neighbor's cell phone video that showed the officers firing. In another highly publicized incident, Lakeside resident Trenton Lohman refused to drop a knife when confronted by sheriff's deputies called to investigate a man looking into cars along Poway Road. He pointed a gun at deputies and drove off in an SUV. When deputies blocked his path, he hijacked a deputy's empty patrol car. A pursuit ensued with several shots fired by deputies. Lohman drove into a ravine and was found dead, struck by at least 1 bullet. A third incident involved the killing of Sergio Weick by sheriff's deputies in Vista. When deputies tried to pull over Weick, a known gang member, he led them on a pursuit but crashed the vehicle. He got out and stumbled, reaching into the waistband of his pants. According to Dumanis, he ignored repeated orders to stop and put his hands up. Officers fired. Weick later died at a hospital. He was found to have 2 knives, 1 on each hip. The 4th case occurred in City Heights. Juan Carlos Fernandez shot his former wife and 3 family members. He killed both of his wife's parents, wounding his wife and her grandfather. After Fernandez dragged his wife into the street with a pistol aimed at her head, a San Diego police officer fired a shotgun and struck Hernandez in the head, killing him, as video from a body camera showed. Reverend Shane Harris, a civil rights leader who has objected to the DA's findings in the Olongo case, said the National Action Network is not raising objections to findings in any of the other 4 police shooting cases.
Protests have erupted across Mexico over a 20% hike in gas prices due to deregulation ordered by President Peña Nieto. The cost of a gallon of gasoline is now about $3.50. That's nearly as much as the $4 for a full day's work earned by a minimum wage worker in Mexico, and that's fueling outrage among impoverished Mexican people. The protests began January 1st and have impacted dozens of cities. A nationwide strike has been called, with participants using Twitter hashtags Gasolinato and Fuero Peña to organize. A Twitter user identified as Paolo posted on Tuesday, "A revolution is rising in Mexico," and urged solidarity. He posted photos of crowds in Mexico City where thousands turned out and burned an image of a Mexican president in effigy, calling for his resignation. Last weekend, the San Ysidro border crossing to San Diego was closed to northbound traffic due to a blockade of protesters. Traffic was diverted to the Otay Mesa crossing, which remained open. In Tijuana, gas stations have been shut down due to blockades of supply centers for Pemex, the government-run oil company. Due to the gas shortage, Mexicans with legal immigration status or dual citizenship have been crossing into the U.S. to fill their tanks in San Diego County. Stores and businesses have shut down in some areas of Mexico. With gas running scarce, some Mexicans have opened their cars to share rides with strangers. Clashes have turned violent in places over the past week. A police officer and a pedestrian were killed in separate looting incidents linked to the protests. In Rosarito, a protester drove a pickup truck into a line of riot police, injuring 7 officers. Nationwide, since the protests began, Mexican officials estimate over 1,500 people have been detained. Nieto has said eliminating fuel subsidies is necessary to bring gas prices in line with international rates. The deregulation package has also allowed competition by private companies to end the state's energy monopoly. But instead of lower prices after competitive stations opened, prices are rising, leading to accusations of corruption. Mexico's president has said keeping gas prices artificially low would mean taking money away from the poorest Mexicans and giving it to those who have the most. But to Mexican people who can now not afford to feed their families, pay rent, and fill their gas tank, the new policies seem to be hurting the very people Nieto claimed would be helped. Now, if you're considering crossing the border into Mexico while these gas price protests are continuing, it's a good idea to check the 511 San Diego Region website at traffic511sd.com for the latest updates on traffic problems in the border region. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
At Tuesday's meeting, San Diego supervisors voted 4-1 to raise their own pay by 12.5%. an increase of over $19,000 a year. Supervisors will now be making over $172,000 annually after they approved the final reading of the ordinance. The pay hike also means an increase in pensions for supervisors, 4 of whom will leave office due to term limits when their current terms end. Only newly elected supervisor, Kristen Gaspar, voted against the hefty pay hike, which takes effect March 17th. Supervisor Ron Roberts said salaries for supervisors have risen less than 1% in the past 9 years, and the formula for setting their salaries hasn't been changed in decades. He called the change fair and reasonable. East County Supervisor Diane Jacob also supported the measure, along with Supervisors Greg Cox and Bill Horn. Before, supervisors earned 80% of the base salary earned by Superior Court judges. Now they will earn 85%. So future raises are possible if the state hikes judicial pay. About 24 members of the public spoke to oppose the pay raise. Christina Innenhoff, with the First Unitarian Universalist Church, told supervisors, "There's suffering going on among your constituents. You are taking away money from people who are suffering. Children do not have enough to eat thanks to your restrictions on food stamps." Deanna Alexander Myers, who has worked for the county for 3 decades, says she can't afford to retire and slammed supervisors for putting their own interests ahead of county workers' needs. "There are so many things we need, but we do not need to spend $90,000 a year on your retirement when we as a community are suffering." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jean Carpenter.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. This week, the Senate's Foreign Relations Committee considers Donald Trump's nominee for Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, the former head of ExxonMobil. But a cover story for In These Times by award-winning investigative reporter Antonia Huaz reveals Tillerson is personally named in a current case alleging that security forces employed by ExxonMobil committed serious human rights abuses, including murder, in Indonesia. The article titled Rex Tillerson Could Be America's Most Dangerous Secretary of State also details the company's long record under Tillerson's leadership of alleged human rights violations, unsafe working conditions, fraud, destruction of the environment, misinformation on climate and public health, support of dictators, global inequality, and wars. The investigative report reveals that Tillerson himself is named in a suit alleging murder, torture, sexual violence, kidnapping, battery, assault, burning, arbitrary arrest, detention, and false imprisonment by security forces employed by ExxonMobil in Indonesia from 2000 through 2004, including while Tillerson served as senior vice president and then president of ExxonMobil. The suit alleges that top ExxonMobil officials have been continuously involved in the Indonesian operations and that company officials who have met with Indonesian officials include Tillerson. Huhas writes that this is one of many lawsuits, investigations, and allegations that will follow Tillerson and, quote, haunt the next administration should Congress permit him to join it. In addition to citing allegations of anti-union behavior by the company, Huhas in her article explains how ExxonMobil played a critical role in the Bush administration's invasion of Iraq in 2003, which led to the near privatization of Iraq's oil industry. In 2009, the company emerged as one of the war's biggest winners. Strong ongoing ties between Tillerson and former members of the Bush administration should raise red flags for Congress and the public over his potential role as Secretary of State, the author concludes. Why does Tillerson want a job that could easily be seen as a step down in power and influence? He turned 65 in March and faced forced retirement. He also has an ongoing interest in his ExxonMobil legacy and unfinished business, particularly in Russia. Where some have argued that Tillerson will adequately represent the U.S. in global climate talks because of his recent stated belief that climate change is real, the company's action under his leadership undermined efforts to slow or halt climate change. With Tillerson at the helm, Huhas found that ExxonMobil nearly doubled its federal lobbying expenditures in 2008 and 2009, outspending every other corporation to successfully thwart congressional and White House efforts to pass meaningful climate change legislation. In addition, ExxonMobil continues to fund climate denial organizations, as well as groups leading attacks on the Paris Climate Change Agreement and President Obama's Clean Power Plan. Although Tillerson himself stated in hearings this week that he supports the Paris Climate Accord. ExxonMobil has also fought climate-related initiatives launched by their own shareholders and largely rejected renewable energy investments. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the Network for Social Justice. My very special guest today is the Reverend Shane Harris, who is the president of the National Action Network here in San Diego. Reverend Harris, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, and it's good to be back here on the show. I was here about a year ago now.
Yeah. That's right. It's a pleasure to have you back.
Yeah.
So today we're going to be talking, listeners, about the upcoming Martin Luther King Day activities.
Right.
And Reverend Shane, tell us where and when that's going to take place.
Well, the march is planned here in San Diego, but its surrounding cities are on the way. It's planned for January 16th, Martin Luther King Day. At 2 p.m., the processional or meeting place will be the Martin Luther King March will be on January 16th at 2 p.m. From 2 to 2:45, we'll meet at the corner of Park Boulevard and B Street. And then we will march down B Street in San Diego, downtown San Diego, to City Hall, where the rally will take place. And at the rally, we're going to outline four main issues of this march. That we're saying no negotiations for the Trump administration and all the way down from state to national to local elected officials, Democrats and Republicans. These are four non-negotiable items.
Excellent. And we'll be getting to those in just a moment. But first of all, you have stated that this march this year is going to be different than in the past because you believe that the Martin Luther King March that San Diego has been holding in recent years has been co-opted from the African-American community.
Right.
become, you know, too militarized and has not really incorporated the core inner city, largely black neighborhoods. So tell me what you're doing to make that difference and what your issues are with the march the way it's been in the past.
Well, nationally, just so I can paint a picture, there has been a fellow called Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck is a well-known conservative. We have been fighting or going back and forth for years with him. Because oftentimes he has said that he got out there and led Martin Luther King, supposedly marches and said that they are reclaiming the King dream. So, on many occasions, this has happened. Al Sharpton, Reverend Sharpton, our national founder, and Glenn Beck have gone back and forth for years on the national level about who gets to reclaim King's dream. But on a national level, to paint the picture, who better to reclaim King's dream than King's children? And what we mean by that is that National Action Network was founded out of the very tradition of Dr. King. Reverend Y.T. Walker, who was a lieutenant to Dr. King, and Reverend William Jones, both men who worked with Dr. King and were lieutenants to him during the SCLC, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference that Dr. King founded in the months of January and February. So we're coming forth and we're saying in San Diego, what we've seen with the Martin Luther King parade, and I'll get into why marches are different than parades. What we've seen with the Democrats and Republicans nationally, locally, and statewide, who will run around touting Dr. King's name, but aren't connected to his dream and don't understand what his vision and agenda really was. Dr. King died fighting a poor people's campaign.
Right.
He was getting ready to lead the march on Washington for poor people. So
that's true. When he was assassinated down in Memphis, he was there to march for the garbage workers
that were
striking. So it wasn't only racial relations, although he's very known for that, obviously, but it was also about standing up for labor and the rights of working people and the rights of the poor.
So we're saying we're taking the King mandate back in the city of San Diego and around. This is a major city in the country. This is the eighth largest city in the United States. We need to be prepared here and we need to be putting forth a plan, the King agenda, to not just resist Trump's alter ego, but to resist the turning black back of the clock in this country. Those who are behind him. This is not about Trump. This is about the smokescreen. He's the smokescreen. There's others who are standing behind him that we should be watching and more concerned about, including the established Republican Congress that is there, that is going to be setting forth goals to get bills passed and legislation passed that reverses civil rights. So we're ready to really take that stand and we're ready to really say, Democrats, go to DC, don't sit down and get quiet, stand up and fight with the activists in the field.
Okay. Now, locally, you have said you are zeroing in on four core issues.
Right.
Can you tell us what those are?
Well, four of the four items are homelessness, workers' rights, and women's rights in the workplace, police reform. We just have held the Alfred Alongo situation.
Right, in
and
El Cajon.
We've led out marches and have rallied for them, the family of Alfred Alongo, and we're working on the cases of Alfred Alongo. And then the final item is mass incarceration and the closing of the private prison industry the way it is, CCA, that has been in our communities and where people often are going through these halfway houses that really are not serving the whole person. That's why these people end up back in prison.
Yeah, the private prison system, we could do an entire show just on that. That was something where the Obama administration had a report, and they were actually calling for the closure of at least some of them, if not all of them, not renewing these contracts. And now who knows what the Trump administration is going to do.
But there
are a lot of abuses going on in those prisons.
And under police reform, the issues with ICE and the concerns about immigrants in the workplace being approached by ICE coming in, looking for certain people and then finding out that there's immigrants in the workplace. So how immigrants are going to deal with that? All those issues are front and center. And immigrants, not just meaning Latinos, these are Africans and Haitians that we often don't talk about. So all of those four items are non-negotiable. It's a part of the We Shall Not Be Moved national march that I'll be in Washington, D.C., on Saturday, January 14th, 2 days before our march here, leading with Reverend Sharpton.
Now, your march on the 16th is going to march through these core urban areas that have been largely left out
right.
by the parade. So tell us a little bit about the communities that you're going to be going through.
Well, let me say this. The parade, and this is what people often don't. I've gotten a lot of emails. We're getting concerns about, well, Reverend, how are you going to slam this group? There are black people on that parade commission. What people don't understand is this, is that the city of San Diego is a part of the funding of the parade. Okay, number one.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, there is a backing, a large backing from people that aren't even connected to King's vision or King's dream backing the Martin Luther King parade for a long time. The third and final reason is that many of our homeless and our workers and our blacks and Latinos who come to the parade can't get into the parade because the contingent price is so high.
Really?
So we're saying that the march on the 16th, January 16th on MLK Day, is for the downtrodden. Those who can't get a contingent in the parade, come on out to the march.
So it's a true people's march.
It's a true people's march and a true Martin Luther King parade. Martin Luther King would not be charging as many high prices as it is to march in the Martin Luther King parade. To
right.
come and march.
He was out speaking on
it's
the Capitol
free.
Mall to a.
What are we charging people for
so.
On a man's day who fought for human rights and civil rights and poor people? Why are we charging people so much money? Because it's not really about King. But then also the other angle of this is the militarization of the Martin Luther King March in San
yeah.
Diego. People often don't talk about the police unions that are marching in the Martin Luther King parade, the police that are involved in the parade. That whole ideal, I don't think King would have a problem with, but he did have a problem with the militarization of America. The fact that we're so willing and quick to run to other countries and do, you know, stand for us. But then we got poor people here and workers here who are getting slandered. Blacks in the 1960s who were bombing churches, black people who were losing their lives because of the racism and hatred in this country. So yeah, there's a real long history with racism and bigotry in the police forces, in the police unions, in the military that King was dealing with. That's why he was so opposed to the war during that time. So people are not talking about what King really talked about. They're using his holiday as a way to get their money and their message out there rather than using his message to motivate our people in the streets.
Okay. Now, if people want to get more information about the march and about the National Action Network and your activities here in San Diego County, Reverend Harris, where can they go online to find that?
Well, they can go to www.nansd.net. And of course, now we're moving into the Imperial County. So it's National Action Network, San Diego and Imperial Counties.
Okay. Is there a Facebook page?
There's a Facebook page, facebook.com/KingMarch. They can go to www.nansd.net/KingMarch though. And there they can get connected on the website with the Facebook page, contact information on how to get involved. We're very excited about the several endorsements of this march that I failed to talk about.
Who are they?
It's not just NAN. It is SCIU221. It's Unite Here Local 30. It's People Over Profits, a major group that's been dealing with mass incarceration. It's the San Diego Immigrant Rights Consortium. It's the countless people who are involved in our community.
Yeah, religious leaders.
NAACP is
well.
Coming mm-hmm. out. Religious leaders, New Horizon Baptist Church. You name it.
So you really have a big coalition there of labor and immigrant rights
right.
and poor people's advocates
right.
and obviously African-American
Women Occupy
civil
San
rights.
Diego that
yeah.
has worked heavily on homeless issues and
yes.
police reform. So this is a coalition effort, and we're starting from January 16th, the King Movement, not just to resist, but to put our agenda front and center. Trump wants the attention. We're saying we're not going to give him the attention. We're going to put our agenda front and center and make it non-compromising. And it's non-compromising for local level politicians, Democrats and Republicans. Right now, we have a big challenge with Myrtle Cole, who's a Democrat,
mm-hmm.
who's the council president in San Diego City. We have a big challenge there because she's appointed mostly Republicans
wow.
to a major committee, the public safety committee that deals with police relations in the county, in the city of San Diego. And all of them live north of the 8. None of them live south of the 8 in the communities where racial profiling and all these issues are there.
Yeah.
So this is a big issue, not just for Trump, not just for Congress. We're saying, people, you need to take a look at what's happening on the local level. watch what the politics that are taking place that are hurting our communities rather than progressing our communities.
Well, very true. And regardless of what happens nationally, there's a lot that can be done locally.
Right.
And even at the national level.
And the five Republicans that are on the San Diego County Board of Supervisors that we are totally missing. So we're dealing with a rollback even in our city.
Yeah.
And Democrats need to stop acting as though we don't have work to do. We got a lot of work to do because we're falling behind.
And we saw last week that I think there's some hope for standing up and blocking some things, even at the federal level. When we saw the new Republican Congress, they control both houses of, of Congress, as well as, in another week here, the presidency.
Right.
And yet, when they voted to get rid of congressional ethics oversight, and there was this enormous public outcry, and everybody was calling and emailing because of the power of social media, and even the mainstream media was reporting on this, and suddenly they turned around and realized they're getting a lot of bad publicity, and they voted to undo that. So there is some hope that when the public speaks out, that some good changes may happen and some bad changes may be blocked.
And Marion, one of the other things that we'll be marching on January 14th and 16th, because I'll be in D.C. on the 14th with Mr. Olango and Reverend Sharpton, we'll lead the March on Washington there.
Right.
The national march. And then the 16th, we'll come back and hold the more local march. One of the things in all these marches, one of the main topics also, you talk about homelessness, workers' rights and equality, police reform and mass incarceration. But there's another point that's not on there, but we would be challenging our Democratic congressional and senatorial members to go to DC and challenge and call for every confirmation hearing that they can call for of the Trump appointments, particularly one of them that we're very concerned about. Senator Jeff Sessions.
The Attorney General candidate.
Right.
Attorney General nominee.
Right.
Who has a very checkered record on civil rights issues back when he was U.S. Attorney down in Alabama.
So if Democrats don't fight, and that we'll say this and I'm finished, you know, preachers, if you give them the mic, they'll go. But Democrats must go to D.C., to our city houses, our local city halls, and our state houses and fight. We cannot afford in this time to sit back and quietly approach this. Trump is not no punk. He's not a quiet guy.
Mm-mm.
He's not. We got to rear up.
No shrinking
violet.
We got
to challenge the same way they're challenging. We got to come back. And Democrats, if they don't show up in this moment, they can best believe we're going to lose more votes. We're going to lose more local offices.
You mentioned Democrats, but what about Republicans, maybe local Republicans standing up? I know a lot of Republicans, even elected officials here, who didn't vote for Trump and don't agree with everything
Republicans
he says.
And Democrats. But we're saying Democrats because Democrats were the esteemed, looking on in this race as the winners. We can't afford to say, well, we lost the Congress, we lost the Senate, we have lost the county board of supervisors, and we're just going to sit back and roll back. No, we need to get up and fight. We need to fight back, and we need to gain those offices back. But it's only going to be through the Democratic Party, and we got to say, Democratic Party as a national party has lost touch with the real people, everyday people in our communities. And the only way they're going to get it back is to get back with the activists on the ground who are fighting.
At the local level, do you see hope for local city councils, local boards, local commissions in places like, El Cajon, Lemon Grove, La Mesa, where we've seen changeovers in some of the council members, where maybe there's hope for reform on certain issues such as homelessness or police oversight?
Well, I think that, yes, in many ways, you saw a lot of election turnout that was good turnout for the local level, like El Cajon, Ben Colasso, and some of the other folks got elected.
Mm-hmm.
You saw Colin Parent in La Mesa, who became the new city councilman there as a Democrat.
Right.
You see this shift of the conversation, but we don't need people to just say, I'm a part of this party. I got elected. What are you going to do? What are you going to do is the question. And in the state that we are in, we don't have a lot of time to celebrate how many local offices we want. We have time to celebrate what our plan is going to be, not just to reject Trump, but to reject the congressional and the senatorial message, to reject what's going to come forth on the five Republicans who are on the county board of supervisors. Are we ready as local city council members to challenge them? The raise that just took place, five county board of supervisors, all Republican, just got a raise. A financial raise in a city where homeless people are struggling to even have a tent.
Right, where the police are taking their tents away. Right. We have an interview coming up later today that'll be airing next week on that issue.
And in the mayor, you have a mayor here who is, Mayor Kevin Faulkner, who is ordering the SDPD to do these kind of things. So you have terribly a real problem with us, you know, and that's what I'm saying. We got to celebrate. We had our moment to celebrate. It's time to get to work. And I'm hoping that the Ben Colachos and the Colin Parents, those in El Cajon and La Mesa, and even around the county who got elected, our Democrats,
Lemon that they Grove, are ready. An African-American mayor now
right.
Out there.
Raquel Vasquez exactly. of Lemon Grove, that they're all ready to get to work because the activists on the ground in every city are going to need them.
Okay. Well, we're running out of time for today, mm-hmm. Reverend Harris. I'd love to talk to you some more and schedule some more in-depth interviews on some of these issues. But let's let our listeners know one more time, if they just tuned in, we've been speaking with Reverend Shane Harris, the president of the National Action Network here in San Diego, about the upcoming March for the people, for the working people and the poor people, taking place on Martin Luther King Day, January 16th. And can you tell us one more time what time that will be, the march, the rally, and where people should meet up if they would like to participate?
Well, Martin Luther King Week is going to be a big week for NAN. On King Day, we will lead the march of January 16th at mm-hmm. 2 p.m. We'll meet from 2 to 2:45 p.m. at the corner of Park Boulevard and B Street, downtown San Diego. And we'll march down B Street to San Diego City Hall, 202 C Street, where a rally will be held at 3:15 p.m.
Okay.
And then on Wednesday, we will have a huge rally in El Centro. NAN is expanding from San Diego to the Imperial County.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very exciting what's getting ready to happen in El Centro. There's a rally that's scheduled at 7 p.m. on January 18th. So where I'll be speaking and keynoting, and all day we'll be there. I'll be holding press conferences, meeting with the mayor and the police chief of El Centro. So there's a big day there. And then on the 21st, which is that Saturday, we have our breakfast, our first annual breakfast, Martin Luther King. And then we will hold a backpack giveaway and school giveaway that Saturday evening with the new mayor and council of Lemon Grove, Raquel Vasquez, and the city of Lemon Grove. It's a partnership with NAN and the city of Lemon Grove. So we're very excited about what is getting ready to happen. And King Week is expansion week for NAN. We're saying we're going to get even more active. We're not going to go into some cave. And we're telling Democrats and others, don't go into a cave. Come out and be ready to fight. We got to be ready to take our community back and our message back. And King Week is where we're going to say we're taking King Week, but we're taking Dr. King's message back.
Very good. Well, listeners, if you didn't catch all of those details, you can go to East County Magazine's website. We do have information up, and you can also go to the National Action Network website.
www.nansd.net, or you can call 619-431-3186.
Very good. Well, Reverend Shane Harris, I want to thank you again very much for joining us today. Yes, on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea. Public interest news for our region.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Rebecca Williamson
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This week's Destination East County includes a writers' conference, a British comedy, a Casablanca film showing in Alpine, and Ben Vereen on stage in Poway.
Plus, we'll tell you about coming attractions, including cabaret nights, a Celtic guitarist, and a powwow. So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
A showing of the classic film Casablanca will take place at the Alpine Library on Tuesday, January 17th at 12:30 p.m. and again at 5:30 p.m. You can watch the movie starring Ingrid Bergman and Humphrey Bogart on the big screen, followed by a film discussion as part of the Alpha Film Classic series.
Lamplighters Theatre in La Mesa will present What the Butler Saw, a classic British farce opening January 20th and running through February 19th. When a psychiatrist tries to seduce an aspiring secretary, his botched efforts lead to comic bedlam involving his insatiable wife, a randy bellhop, a befuddled police officer, and Sir Winston Churchill. For tickets and details, you can visit lamplighterslamesa.com.
Each year, over 300 aspiring writers from around the world attend the San Diego State University Writers Conference. This year, the conference will be held January 20th through the 22nd at the San Diego Marriott in Mission Valley. The conference was the first to pioneer one-on-one appointments for writers with editors, agents, and other top-tier publishing professionals who can provide direct feedback on your writing. This year's keynote speakers include R.L. Stine, one of the best-selling children's authors in history, J.A. Jantz, a top 10 New York Times best-selling author, Jonathan Mayberry, five-time winner of the Bram Stoker Award, and Sherilyn Kenyon, international and New York Times number one best-selling author of fantasy, horror, and more. For information on fees and registration for the 33rd annual San Diego State Writers Conference, visit neverstoplearning.net/writers.
Tony Award-winning Broadway icon Ben Vereen brings his show Steppin' Out Live with Ben Vereen to the Poway Center for the Performing Arts on January 12th at 7:30 p.m. The program is a unique blend of artistry combining a tribute to Broadway, Frank Sinatra, and a very special tribute to Sammy Davis Jr. This show includes Vereen's three-piece ensemble and the Ben Vereen Youth Orchestra. For tickets and details, you can visit PowayCenter.com.
You can meet author Roger Conley at the Alpine Library on Saturday, January 21st at 10 a.m. He has written seven fact-based historical novels, including several that have won awards. The latest is Deep Water, set in the early days of the Cold War and the red-baiting hysteria of the McCarthyism era. Now for a preview of coming attractions.
Young Actors Theater will host cabaret nights on Friday and Saturday, January 27th and 28th at the Young Actors Theater in Spring Valley. The cabaret nights showcase talented YAT members performing musical, dance, and acting performances to benefit the theatrical group. For tickets and more information, you can visit yatsandiego.org.
The largest outdoor ice skating rink in Southern California is open at Viejas till January 29th. Feel the cool Pacific mountain air on your face while you bunny hop, camel spin, and swizzle your way around the ice rink. For details, visit viejas.com.
The Native American Student Alliance at Cuyamaca College will host its third annual powwow on Saturday, February 4th from 10:30 a.m. to 8 p.m. in front of the Communication Arts Complex. The powwow aims to promote Native American heritage with activities such as bird singing, a Native singing style of the Kumeyaay people honoring the culture and traditions of the local tribes of this region. Cuyamaca is an adaptation of a Kumeyaay phrase, Ikuyamak, which writers have translated to mean behind the clouds, above rain, and the place where the rain comes from heavens. No matter the translation, Cuyamaca College's ties to the Native American community and culture are strong, with its location on once indigenous land and its close proximity to many reservations.
Acoustic guitarist, singer, and songwriter Jim Earp will perform Hawaiian and Celtic guitar music as well as folk rock songs at the San Pascual Winery Tasting Room and Gallery in La Mesa on Saturday, February 11th from 7 to 10 p.m. Wine and cheese are available for the performance in the winery's cozy back room. For details or to get a full February schedule of events at this venue, you can visit sanpascualwinery.com. That's all for this week.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Rebecca Williamson with a Crime Beat report. The husband of a woman found dead on a Jamul trail was previously charged with murdering two men, but was acquitted of those crimes. The body of 49-year-old Melissa Whitby was found by a hiker on a trail a mile from the couple's home on Saturday, January 7th. The medical examiner ruled her death a homicide due to trauma to her upper body. Her husband, Winnie Perry Whitney, was charged with killing his fiancée's two brothers back in 1993. The case went to trial, but Perry was acquitted in 1995 after the jury found reasonable doubt, the Star Democrat newspaper reported. Prosecutors claim the motive was to protect the life of his cousin, who said his life had been threatened by one of the men killed. But according to the newspaper reports, the victim's parents, Whitney's own parents, and his fiancée all maintained he was innocent of the killings. Channel 8 News in San Diego reports that this week, Whitney told them off camera that he is cooperating with police and that the last time he saw his wife alive was on December 29th when she left to go to a casino. He said he is not interested in speaking publicly because he's been through this, quote, circus before. On December 30th, Melissa Whitby's co-workers asked authorities to conduct a welfare check after she failed to show up for work. Her husband reported her missing the next day on December 31st, according to a 10 News report. Melissa Whitby was a nurse who worked part-time at Villa Las Palmas Health Center in El Cajon and full-time at the Golden Hills Subacute and Rehabilitation Center. Her co-workers said she was good with patients and will be missed. No arrests have been made, though neighbors have indicated that detectives removed items, including Perry Whitby's boots, from the couple's home as the investigation continues.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Authorities recovered a stolen U-Haul truck Friday in Alpine. In the back of the truck, detectives found property believed to be stolen, including credit cards, mail, gift cards, and more. An Alpine sheriff's deputy patrolling the parking lot at a local casino spotted the stolen U-Haul truck. With help from casino security, the deputy located the truck's two occupants, Kimberly White and Solomon Sain. Both have been arrested. According to Sergeant Chris Galvey, White rented the truck over a month ago and failed to return it. The investigation is continuing, and detectives are working to locate owners of the stolen property. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Pistier.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, public interest news for our region.
This is Miriam Raftery with a sports report. It's official, the Chargers are bolting from San Diego. Dean Spanos, chairman of the Chargers, announced this week that the team is relocating to L.A. and will kick off the 2017 NFL season as the Los Angeles Chargers. In a statement posted at Chargers.com, Spanos noted that San Diego has been the team's home for 56 years. He voiced gratitude and appreciation for fans' support, but added that the team will now work to earn respect and support of L.A. football fans by getting back to winning and being a champion for the community both on and off the field, Spanos said. The team launched FightForLA.com, a website that allows fans here to place a fully refundable $100 deposit on season tickets for the 2017 season. But it's highly questionable how many will do that. The move came after voters in the city of San Diego voted down a ballot measure that would have had taxpayers sharing costs to build a new stadium that the Chargers demanded to stay in town. The Chargers had sought the stadium for years, even during severe economic downturns when the city faced a pension fund crisis and teetered near bankruptcy. Mayor Faulkner eventually came to support Prop C and lobby for it, but it was too late, with many fans angry over the Chargers' threat to move if the team didn't get its way. Many who voted against the measure have suggested that the city might better spend funds on causes such as helping the homeless or building affordable housing instead of bailing out a billionaire's football team. San Diego fans, embittered at the loss, voiced anger and betrayal on social media. Many vowed to drop support for the team entirely, and some set fire to Chargers jerseys in the stadium parking lot, where one arrest was made as fans felt the burn, watching their dreams go up in smoke.
This is Liz Alper with an Aztecs football report. Former San Diego State great Marshall Faulk has been named to the 2017 College Football Hall of Fame class. The National Football Foundation and College Hall of Fame announced Monday morning. Faulk will be the third Aztec in the College Football Hall of Fame, joining Fred Dwyer and head coach Don Coryell. Faulk earned All-America accolades over each of his three seasons at SDSU from 1991 to 1993, including twice being named a unanimous consensus All-American. Faulk led the nation in rushing in both 1991 and 1992 to become then just the fifth player to record back-to-back rushing titles. Faulk, a three-time Heisman Trophy finalist, still owns NCAA FBS records for points per game, while ranking among the top 10 in rushing yards per game and all-purpose yards per game. In 1991, Faulk became the first freshman in history to lead the nation in both scoring and rushing in the same season. The 1991 WAC Freshman of the Year, Faulk rushed for 386 yards in his first career start against Pacific to set a then NCAA single-game record. He finished with 1,429 yards and 21 touchdowns on the ground in 1991 and 17 catches for 201 yards and two additional scores. In 1992, Faulk was named the WAC Offensive Player of the Year after rushing 265 times for 1,630 yards and 15 touchdowns in just 10 games while adding 18 receptions for 128 yards. He finished second in the Heisman Trophy voting in 1992. Faulk finished his collegiate career with 1,530 rushing yards and 21 touchdowns on 300 attempts in 1993, while making a remarkable 47 catches for 644 yards and 3 touchdowns. A three-time first-team All-WAC selection, Faulk led the conference in scoring in all three seasons at SDSU and twice led the league in rushing. A two-time recipient of the Joe Kearney Award as the WAC Athlete of the Year across all sports, Faulk set numerous conference records, including single-game, career touchdowns, and career rushing average. He set nearly every San Diego State rushing record while leading the team in rushing, scoring, and all-purpose yards every year of his career. The number 2 overall pick in the 1994 NFL Draft, Faulk split his 12-year career between the Indianapolis Colts and the St. Louis Rams. His many accolades in the NFL include the 2000 MVP award, 7 Pro Bowl selections, and the 1994 Offensive Rookie of the Year award, leading the Rams to a victory in Super Bowl 34 and an appearance in Super Bowl 36. Faulk is 11th in NFL history with 12,280 rushing yards. He is a member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame and the Colts Ring of Honor. Faulk has continuously given back to the community, establishing the Marshall Faulk Foundation for Underprivileged Youth and providing funding for YMCA youth programs, the Boys to Men Mentoring Network, and Ninth Ward Field of Dreams. He also created the Marshall Faulk Scholarship Endowment at San Diego State. Faulk can currently be seen as an analyst on the NFL Network. Faulk and the other 12 honorees will be inducted at the 60th National Football Foundation Annual Award Dinner on December 5, 2017 at the New York Hilton Midtown. The inductees will also be honored at the National Hall of Fame Salute at the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl on January 1, 2018, and will be recognized at their respective collegiate institutions with the National Football Foundation Hall of Fame on-campus salutes during the fall. Faulk's accomplishments will be forever immortalized at the College Football Hall of Fame in Atlanta.
The Laguna Mountain Volunteers Association is looking for more members to help with activities on Mount Laguna. Their volunteers staff the Visitor Information Center, answer questions from visitors, and handle sales of adventure passes, books, maps, and forest-related items. Their Trail Mountainous crew keeps trails safe and enjoyable for hikers, mountain bikers, and travelers on horseback. Volunteers have also helped rebuild an observation deck destroyed by fire and other projects. The Laguna Mountain Volunteers also provide interpretive services in summertime, including campfire programs for children and adults at area campgrounds. A campfire program might include information on mountain history, including depictions of mountain men, Imperial Valley farmers, a Kumeyaay Native American, or the first ranger on the mountain. Other programs include wildlife crafts, such as making pinecone bird feeders. The volunteers also lead nature walks during the summer, providing information on the forest flora and fauna. You can even create your own program. Volunteers are needed year-round, from winter snows to summer's warmth atop the 6,000-foot high peak. For more information on how to join and become a volunteer, you can visit the Laguna Mountains Volunteers Association website at www.lmva.net or call Bob Perry at 619-442-6212. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community. Construction of the controversial Tule Wind Energy Project in McCain Valley begins in early January, starting with widening of McCain Valley Road. Upon completion, the project will include 62 wind turbines on over 12,000 acres of federal and state public lands, including a national recreational area. A public notice has been issued cautioning users of McCain Valley Road, Lake Canyon Campground, Cottonwood Campground, and the off-highway vehicle area about temporary closures and traffic delays. During January, the construction will commence Mondays through Saturdays from 7 in the morning until 5 in the evening. McCain Valley Road will remain open through construction, but visitors may encounter slow-moving construction vehicles and short road delays at times. Drivers are asked to use caution and please watch for workers on the roadway. If construction work is expected to cause delays longer than 15 minutes on McCain Valley Road, an advisory will be posted at least 48 hours in advance on the public information board at the entrance to McCain Valley Recreation Area and online at TuleWindECCMP.com. Temporary closures of campgrounds and the off-highway vehicle areas will be necessary during construction starting in mid-January and will be posted at least 48 hours in advance. Now, if you have questions, you can call a free hotline at 844-784-6549. The Tule Wind Project has generated strong opposition from area residents, recreational enthusiasts, and environmentalists. Donna Tisdale, who led efforts to halt the project in court, told us, "We have exhausted all of our legal challenges to no avail. Our efforts did manage to reduce the project footprint and number of turbines and to extract limited mitigation funds for some community groups. But," she adds, "no amount of mitigation can make up for the long-term destruction of public lands, wildlife, and other resources or impacted residents." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.